Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. We believe small actions can have great impact. Take a small action today. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension.
Neil, thank you very much for that. Now, the World Health Organization warned today that in responding to the Omicron variant, wealthier countries such as Ireland must resist the temptation to hoard COVID vaccines. The message is that new variants won't stop landing on our shores until vaccines have been rolled out everywhere. Meanwhile, a letter signed by 400 Irish scientists and medics under the umbrella group People's Vaccine Alliance Ireland has been delivered to the Taoiseach's office this afternoon, calling on the Irish government to provide leadership in this area. In a moment, we'll hear from Susan Smith, an Irish GP and Professor of Primary Care Medicine at the Royal College of Surgeons, Ireland. She's one of those behind today's letter. But first, we're going to Geneva and the World Health Organization's Special Envoy on COVID-19, Dr. David Nabarro. And you're welcome, David, to the programme this evening. Has the WHO seen any indications at this point that since Omicron emerged, particularly wealthier countries are less inclined to share vaccines with developing countries?
Thank you. Actually, during the last few weeks, everybody, there has been an improvement in the ability of the COVAX program. That's the one that's been set up to move vaccines through the world. That COVAX program has had a better access to vaccines recently. It looked as though richer countries have heard our plea and are just holding back on offering extra money to the manufacturers so that they can get more vaccines into their stores and have more reserves. But since Omicron has arrived, there is a real worry from what we're hearing that countries are going to up their orders for vaccine to try to get more reserves. And that's why Dr. O'Brien of the World Health Organization issued a strong warning, because actually we just started to see improvements in vaccine supplies going to the rest of the world, and the last thing we want is it all to tighten up again.
So what do you say to leaders then in wealthier countries who are coming under big pressure from their populations to roll out booster vaccines to those who are already doubly vaccinated, such as Ireland? You know, most of us have been doubly vaccinated and there's a big booster program underway here, but who are concerned about waning efficacy, obviously, many of us are concerned about waning efficacy. What do you say to the leaders of those countries, given that I think it's just over 7% of people in low-income countries have had one vaccine dose?
Thanks very much. I mean, we have seen research that has shown very clearly that vaccines reduce the risk of severe illness and death. We have not seen detailed research and been able to assess it that demonstrates the speed of waning efficacy in people who've received two doses. There's a lot of anxiety about waning efficacy. And people say, well, after 6 months or 1 year, the protection is greatly reduced. But we haven't had the kind of data that we need in order to actually assess the degree to which that protection wears off. We can understand why governments are saying to their people, get a booster. They're basically saying, get yourself topped up as full as you possibly can be, in order to help get the maximum protection as we go through the winter. But this is more a council of high levels of willingness to be protecting against the disease rather than defined by data. And, you know, that's why we have to talk like we do. We know that countries, including France, for example, where I'm sitting at the moment, where I'm living, and Switzerland, where I'm sitting, that these countries are asking people to get third doses, but we are also not equipped with exact data on what extra protection that third dose will give them. I hope that's clear.
Yeah, you know, we've heard an awful lot in this country about Israel, because, you know, they're a good bit ahead of many of the rest of us, and they've gone ahead obviously with the third dose, and now talking about a fourth dose, and their data does seem to suggest that it has offered greater protection. And even here, we were told by our own health service that when the over 80s got their booster, that they saw a drop off in hospitalizations among that sector of the population. So it did seem to have, you know, a practical,
good news
important
to hear.
effect. But it is good news. But and obviously then you can understand why governments would want to give the booster to give their own populations the maximum amount of protection. Mm. So I suppose the question is, what is the WHO's position on it? Should it be that vulnerable populations, for example, such as the over 80s or the over 70s and other vulnerable groups, should get the booster but not others? Or should everyone get it? Or what is the position on it, given the problem then worldwide?
We are super careful about giving blanket advice at this particular stage. I think that our position has been that it's perfectly right that vulnerable people should receive boosters. And a national government has to decide what the cutoff point is to determine vulnerability. Okay. But our position generally is that the lives that can be saved by giving vaccine to older people, people who are heavily exposed to the virus, or people who've got coexisting disease that could add to the risk, the lives can be saved by immunizing those people throughout the world is a very large number. We believe it is more than the lives that can be saved by giving boosters in Western European countries. And we've said, please make sure that those who are in high need in developing countries, who might otherwise very easily get severely ill or die, please protect them. And if that means you've got to wait a month or 2 months before having your booster, surely that's the right choice. Surely we want to see the vaccines used where they can bring greatest benefits in terms of preventing extreme illness or saving life. And so right now, there is a lot of vaccine now being produced in our world. And the anxiety we have is that governments of wealthy nations, high-income nations, will buy extra vaccine to have more vaccine in stock. And we're saying, wait a bit, wait a month or two, because it'd be great if we can just get more supplies to poor countries so that the people who are really at high risk can get themselves vaccinated as quick as possible.
And where then does the vaccinations for children come into that? Because we've just announced here that there is a plan to start vaccinating young children, I think it's between 5 and 11, from early next year. Is that at all necessary given the global need for vaccines elsewhere?
Well, thank you. The reason why countries are vaccinating children is that there's a lot of COVID being transmitted among children at the moment. And the vaccination of children is being done, firstly, to prevent severe disease or death in children, and secondly, to try to use the vaccine to reduce the overall spread of virus in the population. Firstly, I have to say that children very rarely get severe disease or death as a result of COVID. And secondly, actually, there is little information about the extent to which you can reduce transmission among children by vaccinating them. And so we are again saying about children, could you possibly postpone decisions to vaccinate children until we've made certain that the high-risk people throughout the world have all been vaccinated? Then if you decide you want to go ahead and vaccinate your children, that's fine, but please let's get the rest of the world up to the level of the wealthy world first. Otherwise, we've got our priorities a bit muddled up.
That's also very interesting what you're saying about the evidence on transmission with vaccines in children. Just to be clear on what data there is, you know, obviously, as you say, there's a very high level of COVID amongst children. I don't think it's just in Ireland. I think it's across the Western world at the moment. And I suppose the expectation of people might have been that if we vaccinate our young children, that rate of transmission will reduce. Yeah. Are you saying the data doesn't support that at the moment?
I'm saying that we don't have studies of vaccination of children which have shown in any kind of conclusive way, a really major drop in transmission as a result of the vaccination. This is one of the areas where more work is needed, Sarah, and it's really important. How much does vaccination of any age group reduce the transmission of the virus between people who are vaccinated? Is it a big reduction or a small reduction? And I've been looking at data from a number of different countries. It's starting to come in, but we haven't got a full picture yet.
Okay, so the call then from yourself is to hold off for a while on vaccinating children for wealthier countries and until more of the world is done. How long do you think? Would you say 2 months, 3 months, 6 months? How long do you think we need to wait on vaccinating these populations that are less vulnerable?
My colleagues and I have taken the view that 2 months of hold back for boosters, particularly for people who are not vulnerable, and 2 months of holdback on vaccinating children who are not vulnerable might be really helpful in liberating enough vaccine so that COVAX can get what it needs for poor countries to be able to vaccinate their most at-risk populations.
Okay. And I don't know, can you give me an indication as to who the WHO believes are vulnerable? You know, I mean, are the in terms of age groups, there's obviously the vulnerable populations that most people will agree on in terms of underlying conditions and the older age groups. But is there a cutoff point, like, for example, the 50s and over or the 50s and under? Have you decided?
The trouble with cutoff points is that it's a very local decision deciding who is susceptible and who is not. But in general, countries are working at over 65s as being really very vulnerable indeed. And people with diseases like diabetes and heart disease, or people who've got immune suppression. Also people who work in healthcare or in other direct contact sectors, like working in care homes, they all need to be put into the vulnerable group. Not because there's anything about them that makes them vulnerable, but they happen to be exposed a lot, or if they got sick, they might get into trouble. So that's what we're really saying in terms of vulnerability. But I want to stress, different countries have put different cutoff points for what represents vulnerability in terms of age, and that's why I don't like giving an absolute figure. And WHO is very careful to be clear that this is a national issue, not one on which we feel that we can exercise more than offering advice.
Just finally then, David, if we don't get our ducks in a row globally and start working together on this, Omicron has obviously emerged from a country or countries where there's low vaccination rates. Is it likely, in the WHO's view, that there will be more virulent strains or potentially damaging strains than Omicron? I know we don't even know how damaging Omicron is at the moment, but is that likely or possible to happen if we don't get the vaccination rates up globally?
Sarah, I'd like to say it absolutely clear. Every one of us in the World Health Organization believes that by not working properly together in a joined up and integrated way, the leaders of the different countries in our world are creating a situation that could lead to many years of suffering, particularly in poor countries. The long-term damage of the way in which vaccines are being rolled out at the moment is potentially huge in terms of economic consequences, in terms of public health consequences, and most of all, in terms of just ordinary fairness about how humans should treat each other. So we need to get this right, and it gets more and more urgent. And I'm glad that in RTE, you are highlighting this issue tonight. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for joining us this evening. That's Dr. David Nabarro from the World Health Organization. We'll turn now to Susan Smith, GP and Professor of Primary Care Medicine at the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland. And as I mentioned earlier, Susan, I know you were one of those people who signed a letter and sent a letter to the Taoiseach today calling on the Irish government to provide leadership in this area. And the first step you want is for our government to support the TRIPS waiver, which would mean that the World Trade Organization countries would force vaccine manufacturers such as Pfizer to share patented vaccine information with developing countries so they can make their own until the crisis passes.
Yes, thank you very much, Sarah. That's exactly what we're hoping, that we'd like to have a meeting with the Taoiseach. So over 400 doctors and scientists signed a letter seeking for our government to show leadership in this area. And the the critical thing is that, as Dr. Navarro has pointed out, he's focused a lot on vaccine equity in terms of redistributing the doses that we've got. But there is another mechanism, and that's to increase vaccine production. And we will be particularly interested in vaccine production being in the hands of individual countries that could then control their own vaccination programs. So the TRIPS waiver is the mechanism for that to happen. It's supported by over 100 countries around the world, including the United States, and it's largely the EU that are blocking it at the moment, which is really, really disappointing. And our government has got influence within the EU, and we were really calling on them to address this issue. There's no logical arguments why we shouldn't waive patents during a global emergency and seek to allow increased production of vaccine, because I think you're right when you were asking Dr. Navarro about this idea of high-income countries. They are going to hoard vaccines again, because as soon as they think there's another variant coming, they will want more vaccine doses, and they will have far more purchasing power than low-income countries, and we will be in an endless cycle of pandemic. The recent predictions from one of the world's leading journals in the last few days is that this pandemic will now go into 2023-24 unless we address global vaccine equity.
And of course, as you know, the pharmaceutical companies have been arguing for the last year and a half that if this step was taken, it would disincentivize them from investing in future vaccines.
Well, that's just an argument that doesn't stand up. They talk about needing to have this support for innovation. This has happened before in relation to drugs for HIV. They argued against sharing of the technology and the IP for HIV drugs, and eventually that happened, and there was generic manufacturing in the global south, and there was a huge drop in deaths from HIV, and it didn't end innovation across the world. Everything went on as it had before. The TRIPS waiver is a measure that is an emergency measure only for the duration of the pandemic, and it doesn't apply to high-income countries. So the countries can continue to make money in high-income countries, but they're just going to be regulated to share their IP and their technology transfer. It's not just the IP that's needed, but the countries need to know. And we know that there's more than 140 factories waiting to be able to make COVID vaccines across the world outside of those that are currently controlled.
Okay. Just finally then, the European Commissioner Thierry Breton was speaking to Morning Ireland today, and he was defending the EU's approach to all of this. He was saying that the EU has been honourable in its approach. Do you agree with that? And do you really think Ireland, you know, small little country in the EU, arguably less punching power since the UK left as our ally in the EU, can really push the EU to do anything on this?
Well, the first question about, I heard the EU commissioner this morning, and I noticed that he talked about the EU's donations to 120 countries, but he didn't mention any numbers. And currently the numbers of EU donations, so you have to think about the difference between a promised donation and a delivered one. At the moment, the EU are standing on 14% of their promises delivered. So that's not really acceptable. Okay. So that's the first issue. We're not delivering the way we say that, you know, the people say that we are. And the second issue is that every country in the EU has to work towards a TRIPS waiver. And Ireland has a role in that. We pride ourselves on, despite being a small country, having international influence. And I just noticed yesterday that Scotland have decided to try and push the UK into supporting the TRIPS waiver. So it's only a matter of time. If all countries across the EU started to support a TRIPS waiver, it could happen.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us to talk us through it. That's Professor Susan Smith, Professor of Primary Care Medicine at the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland.